and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Well, in the first part of today's program, we'll hear Florida This Week, which is a PBS show about state and local politics. And later on, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls while we're replaying the show from last Friday night. You can always comment about the topics that we're covering. You can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. On the show that we're about to hear, we'll hear from a couple of journalists, and we'll also hear from a Democrat and Republican, and they'll be debating some issues, including President Trump's decision to make it harder for American citizens to travel to Cuba. Also going to be talking about the prosecution of that deputy who stood outside the Parkland High School during the massacre in February of last year. And that former deputy is now being charged with 11 criminal counts. He could be in prison for almost 100 years. We'll talk about that on the show today, and then we'll open up the phone lines later. This is WMNF 88.5 FM. Coming up next, the Trump administration limits American travel to Cuba. The deputy who hid during the Parkland High School massacre is arrested and faces 11 criminal counts. North Florida Congressman Mike Hill is embroiled in another controversy, and critics say migrant children are being held in prison-like conditions in South Florida. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Zachary Sampson is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Chris Ingram is a political consultant and a Republican. Beth Weinstein is a marketing consultant and communications director for Indivisible Pasco Florida 12 and a Democrat. And Rosemary Goodrow O'Hara is the editorial page editor for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Nice to have you all here. Thank you for coming.
Happy to be here.
Well, this week, the Trump administration issued new executive orders restricting U.S. citizens' travel to Cuba, prohibiting stops by cruise ships and blocking organized tour groups. Citing what it called Cuba's domestic repression and its support for President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, the Trump administration said the measures are designed to prevent Cuba's military and security services from profiting from the country's tourism industry. The Department of the Treasury and the State Department said group educational or cultural trips to Cuba or people-to-people travel would no longer be permitted. One local politician was caught off guard by the curtailment. St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Kreisman was on a cruise ship heading for Havana. When the new restrictions were put into place, his boat was diverted to the Bahamas. So, Chris, do these restrictions make sense?
Well, I got to start by saying when President Obama announced that he was changing America's 60-plus-year-old Cuba policy several years ago, it was one of the few moments where I was actually proud of something that President Obama did. And on the flip side of that, I'm equally very disappointed in President Trump's actions on Cuba here this last week and heretofore, you know, when he's made some announcements about further changes undoing what Obama had done a year or so ago. This is absolutely just Trump pandering to a very small vocal minority of anti-Castro regime type Cubans from primarily Miami-Dade, South Florida area. And it is nonsense because we've had this policy for 60 plus years. We failed to get rid of two Castros. We are not going to get rid of the current regime. The claim that this is somehow a security threat, an economic threat to the United States is absolute nonsense. Anybody with half a brain can understand that Cuba is not a threat to the United States of America. We have much greater threats that we have intimate relations financially, you know, with trade and whatnot, that we don't really bat an eye about. You know, I could point to Saudi Arabia and their human rights abuses, China and its human rights abuses. We could go down the list. And where is the outrage from the administration, from the American people, from the Cubans down in Miami about all of those various indiscretions. It's hypocrisy and it's shameful pandering, and I am very disappointed in President Trump.
It shows how independent you are as a Republican. So Beth, who's going to feel the pain? I mean, if there are these travel restrictions, are the people of Cuba going to feel any pain because of this? Is the Venezuelan government going to feel any pain? Who's going to feel pain?
It's actually going to be a combination of the Cuban people who, during this loosening up, have really built a small economy. It has given them a certain amount of financial independence. It has allowed people to augment and be able to support their families in a way that they hadn't been able to before. And then, in addition, there's been a burgeoning tourism business that in many ways has been centered in Florida because of our proximity to Cuba. So therefore, there are entrepreneurs on both sides, you know, who are suffering from this, people who are running travel industry businesses plans here, as well as, you know, the larger organizations like Carnival and Norwegian Cruise Lines and the airlines that fly back and forth to Cuba.
Zach, Beth's right. I mean, and this is sort of an injection of capitalism into Cuba, and it also helps capitalists back here in the U.S., and the president is taking aim at both.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, here in Tampa, obviously, one of our mayors was on a cruise ship there when this policy was announced. You know, we have pretty close ties, both culturally and because of our proximity to Cuba. We have flights that leave from here. We have cruises that leave from our port, right? What's kind of interesting is on the Florida level, this is actually an issue that is key to our two senators. You know, both Senator Scott and Senator Rubio have been pretty outspoken in their criticism of the Venezuelan government under Maduro. And, you know, when this policy is announced, it's announced as something that is combating and is partially due to Cuba's support for the Venezuelan current government. And, you know, so I think that goes down sort of as a win for both of our senators in Florida in terms of the policy pushes that they've made.
Mm-hmm. Because they've got the president to side with them. Rosemary, in South Florida, people who have emigrated from Cuba and from Venezuela and other countries, I would imagine, I mean, you're down there in South Florida. Right. Are they cheering this move?
No, I think the South Florida Cuban community is changing. It's been 60 years, and the older generation still supports the embargo, but the younger generation would like to see some relaxation of these policies. And I think that, you know, how do we really get change in Cuba because our policy has not helped in 60 years? To help the Cuban community, the Cuban people, rise up and sort of take control. And do we do that by having them be angry at our country because we are further squeezing the economic pipeline? Or does by getting to know us and us getting to know them and us supporting them, does that better position them for self-determination in what kind of a country? This is all about politics. And I would note, to Zach's point, a day after the president did this, both Senator Scott and Senator Rubio announced that they supported the tariffs from Mexico. And that was no coincidence. They broke with the Republicans in the Senate to support him on these tariffs. And I think that was a deal.
Mm-hmm. And I would add, you know, this whole ruse, this is all about Venezuela and our concern with the relationship that Cuba has with Venezuela. The United States had a close relationship with the regime in Venezuela for years. When it suited us well, we were okay with it. And now it doesn't suit us well, so we're not. The only thing that Cuba can offer Maduro is a safe haven. I mean, the Cubans have very little to offer in terms of real defense or anything strategic, and certainly no hard currency. So this is just an opportunity to try to make it look like it's something for what it's not. But I think at the end of the day, the American people are going to, over the course of the next few years, express their frustration with this ongoing nonsense of back and forth on Cuba policy and come to a policy that is more like what Obama had.
And Chris, let me ask you the same question I asked before. That is that you've got these small businesses popping up in Cuba, people renting out their homes for the night and people starting small restaurants. This kind of sets that back because not as many American tourists are going to go to Cuba.
No, absolutely not. I went down there with my wife last summer, about this time last year in June, and I had a lovely time. The people were wonderful. You know, we spent a little bit of money. We did our people-to-people exchange and saw the sights. You know, at the end of the day, the American government's policy shouldn't be directed for what's good for the Cuban people. It should be what's good for the American people. But at the end of the day, I think what's good for the average Cuban ultimately leads to what's better for the United States of America's interest vis-a-vis changing this policy so that they have greater capitalistic opportunities and see that the type of economic environment they've lived in for the last 60 years is not healthy and that they should move more toward one that we embrace.
Okay. Well, a former Broward County deputy is facing 11 criminal charges for failing to confront the gunman in last year's Parkland School massacre. The retired deputy, Scott Peterson, was arrested and charged with child neglect, culpable negligence, and perjury stemming from the February 2018 shooting that killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He was the school resource officer and allegedly hid during the massacre, failing to confront the gunman and to protect the students. If convicted on all charges, he faces nearly 100 years in prison. It's unusual for any law enforcement officer to be prosecuted for inaction. So, Rosemary, do these charges make sense?
Oh, I think these charges do not make sense. And I think that they are a political reaction to trying to hold people accountable when people at all levels of government have failed in the story of what happened in Parkland. This guy is detestable. There's no question about that. But they've almost made him a sympathetic figure now down there to charge him with child neglect. First, good luck getting a jury to convict on a law, using a law that's been stretched and twisted in order to apply it to law enforcement. This guy, first off, there was no policy. The policy of the Broward Sheriff's Office said you may pursue a shooter, you don't have to. So the policy didn't. In federal court, a judge said in a case where a lawsuit from families, that civilly there was no duty to protect because the kids were not in his custody. So if in civil court he's not liable, how now in criminal court is he liable? Now, if he lied about how many shots he heard and perjured himself, that's a different matter. But his defense is that he didn't hear all those shots in the school, and he thought there were shots going on outside, and that's why he set up a perimeter and told people not to go in. I don't know. Nobody believes him, and everybody thinks he is the coward of Broward. But I think the danger of having these charges apply to law enforcement, which has never happened before, is a dangerous step. And yesterday I heard from somebody in the Guardian Ad Litem program. It's like, oh my gosh, if I can go to jail for the rest of my life for not helping some kid, there are going to be ramifications from this.
Your paper won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of this tragedy down there. Is he a scapegoat? Is he being...
No, he's not a scapegoat. He failed in his duty to protect. He did have a duty to protect. But he's also deserves his day in court, which now he'll get. I think people are offended that he gets $9,000 a month in a pension, so he's not a scapegoat, and the sheriff down there has been removed too and replaced. But at this level, there's not been a lot of accountability, and that he kind of got to retire and get his pension offended a lot of people.
Chris, you're an ex-law enforcement officer. How do you take this?
Well, I work for the Collier County Sheriff's Office as a community service deputy right after I graduated from high school, and also worked in 911 centers. So I have some understanding of, you know, the law enforcement and what they go through. And I think that what is really difficult for me in trying to objectively look at the situation that happened at Parkland and this deputy's role is none of us were there. We don't know what he saw. We don't know what he heard. The number of shots that he heard. I mean, I could tell you, if I heard gunfire, I probably couldn't tell you exactly how many shots that I heard. And trying to recollect that hours later after all of this tragic stuff. So, you know, I probably take a surprisingly more sympathetic view toward him and just not being able to be in his shoes. None of us could or have been. And to cast judgment against him, I'm sure the last thing that he ever wanted to occur when he woke up that morning and went to go do his job wearing that badge was to see kids get hurt. I just have a hard time making that judgment on him. So I just kind of leave it at that.
Zach, there were reports this week about the ripple effect that Rosemary talked about, guardian ad litem, people now being worried that they're not doing enough to protect children. And we're seeing other reports of other professions worrying about the ripple effect here.
Yeah, certainly. And I think especially right now, because in Florida you have the Guardian program generally, which has been implemented, which may now, it's commonly referred to as the Arming Teachers Bill. Mm-hmm. But if you were to take this similar situation and you had a teacher who had signed up to, to be a guardian in a school and had a gun and they didn't respond, would they be held to these same charges? Would they be held to the same standard? And the fact is, we don't really know. The sponsor of the bill has said, we got to look at this. This is something that's going to continue to evolve in future sessions. And it speaks to the legal gray area that we're in. Parkland is an obvious tragedy that demanded an immediate political response, but that political response is going to play out over 4 or 5 years. And in the course of that happening, there's going to be a lot of these type of legal questions. And until those are answered, it's going to be hard for people to sign up and know what they're risking when they make that decision to volunteer.
All right. Well, North Florida Republican lawmaker criticized for his response to a suggestion that gay people be put to death says he now regrets his tone. When State Representative Mike Hill met with constituents at Pensacola City Hall last month, one man in the audience said the Bible calls for a man having an affair with another man to be put to death.
In 1 Corinthians, it says that a man that has an affair with another man will be put to death.
It says that in the Old Testament, too. True.
Can you introduce legislation?
Introduce legislation? Yeah, I wonder how that would go.
The chuckling response drew criticism from both elected Republicans and Democrats. Several days after the comments came to light, Hill said he regretted how the tone of his response was received. He said he believes that no matter one's race, sexual orientation, religious affiliation, economic status, or otherwise, that all lives are created equal in the image of God. So, Zach, is the issue over now?
Clearly the issue is not over. This is going to be an ongoing political issue for Representative Hill until there's some clarity here. But members of his own party, Governor DeSantis has sided with Speaker Oliva, who has demanded an apology. Chris Bowles has weighed in. I mean, the Republican leadership is demanding more of a response from Representative Hill to answer these questions, and so is the Democratic leadership. So I think it's quite clear that it's far from over because, frankly, his initial apology was kind of for not correcting, was the exact language, not correcting the Bible verse and what was wrong from the constituent in the Bible verse, which is really not addressing the idea of whether or not you should execute people in Florida, which is really kind of what the
Bible verse. What was
I think that he wanted to correct that the Bible verse didn't say you should, lead to death for that offense. But that's a little bit different than the sentiment behind the statement. And I think that's what people are still demanding is some addressing, some clarity on the representative's view of the sentiment behind that question and that statement.
And Beth, now there are calls for his resignation.
Okay, so while I don't agree with his statement, and there are many reasons why this man is unfit for office, I think it is interesting how the Republican Party is so quick to ask for his censure when other of his colleagues who are perhaps not quite as brown have said worse things, and yet have not met with the same amount of anger or reprehension that goes along with that. So you have to, it is curious how within the GOP they pick and choose who they're going to castigate over inherently racist, sexist statements.
I would challenge that, Rob, and say that I don't think it's necessarily a GOP thing. I think that a large part of it is a media-driven thing, that the left in the media doesn't like the fact that there is a black Republican. And so there's an opportunity for them to take him down. I don't buy the we're looking at black members who are Republican differently than we are white members who are Republican who say inappropriate things. At the end of the day, who gives a damn what the color of his skin is? Let's address the fact that he said something that's grotesque and shame anyone and everyone who says those kinds of things. Hello, it's 2019.
I agree.
He clearly didn't get the memo.
But
and he probably was too comfortable in the environment which he was in, and he didn't want to offend anyone. He ended up offending a lot more people than if he had just done the right
thing. And I think you also, I mean, politicians have to be cognizant that there's going to be a camera and some recording device wherever they go at this point, right? And if we look at, you know, Representative King or a multitude of others who, our president who says racist things on a almost daily basis with the tacit approval of the GOP, but yet, you know, again, and I'm not in any way saying that this representative
statement there saying that the president says racist things every day. Tell me three things in the last week that he said that were racist.
I've actually this week trying to avoid the news cycle because he's personally. Let's talk about what he has said. You know, again, he's referred to the majority of Mexicans as rapists and murderers.
No, that's not what he said. No, that's absolutely not what he said. And
well,
you know that.
He said that people coming across the border had
a good number of them.
I would say that, let me just
stop recycling things from 4 years ago.
If I could jump in.
Rosemary?
And I would challenge you, Beth, in that I think the media does, you know, we get criticized for just about everything. But we did also call out, and I'm trying to think who you were talking about, and it might have been Senator Dennis Baxley, who is white, and who said that in when asked about abortion, his answer had to do with, oh my God, the birth rate is falling and, you know, immigrants are changing our culture.
Yes.
It wasn't about preserving the sanctity of life, which is an argument that you can understand. His argument in abortion was that, oh my God, the birth rate among whites is falling and these immigrants are having babies and they're changing our culture. So we did call it out. It's not just, I mean, it's sort of equal opportunity, and we've called out the president as well for his behavior.
And I'm not saying that the media hasn't. What I'm saying is the Republican Party has. You know, so the difference is the response of the Republican Party versus the media. Again, we're in a 24-hour news cycle. So you say something and it gets called out.
We covered Baxley last week on the show, and I think to your point, I don't remember, Chris, Republicans complaining about Baxley's comments, but here in the case of Representative Hill, there have been some, but we won't decide this here. Well, three South Florida Democratic Congress members are demanding that the Trump administration shut down a South Florida migrant teen holding facility and release the hundreds of children there to small shelters or to relatives.
The South Florida U.S. representatives say their decision comes after a recent federal court filing by immigrant advocates for the migrant children describing prison-like conditions endured in the Homestead facility. That detention facility is run by a private contractor with ties to former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly.
So, Beth, is it fair to call what's going on in Homestead prison-like?
I think it's actually a national tragedy and one that we haven't even begun to understand the ramifications of. The trauma that we are doing to a generation of children, some of whom are going to remain in this country and become part of our society, is in many ways irreparable. And I think morally, to look at what we have done in the name of politics in many ways, and I'm not saying that there isn't a humanitarian crisis. There's many humanitarian crises that are going on across, you know, South America. It's just that we're not taking the steps that we need to address the real core reason of why.
You're talking about why people leave Central America.
Exactly. Yeah. And now that we have this influx, we have to deal with it. And by traumatizing these children, it's not going to fix the situation.
It's absolutely a prison-like condition. I mean, do you see the fence around there? People are not allowed to go in without 2 weeks' notice to go and inspect. This week, they said that the federal government said they're going to stop teaching them, they're going to stop letting them have recreation, and they're going to stop letting them have legal access because, you know, this program is costing too much. These are kids. These are kids. They said, well, they can stay in their rooms. Well, stay in their rooms. They're staying in tents that have bunk beds, like 136 bunk beds. It's outrageous what we're doing to kids.
Chris, what would you say about the way the kids are being held?
I haven't been there. I wouldn't cast judgment that it's a jail-like facility. I know that you made the comment about offended because they have a fence around it. If they didn't have the fence around it and the kid wandered off into the street, they'd be looking to complain and to sue that the kid got run over by a car.
Would you want
at some level, they have to contain these people. And we don't have the funds. We don't have the apparatus structurally in place to deal with the influx that we've been seeing. The solution to this problem is to stop them at the border.
Okay, we are almost out of time. We should go on, but I'm sorry. Before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? And Chris, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Well, back to the border. I think that President Trump's hardline insistence that we're going to have tariffs with Mexico if they don't work with the United States to address the border crisis that we're facing, and it is a humanitarian and an economic crisis, and that if we get tough with Mexico, Mexico will respond. We've seen the president in discussions with the president of Mexico. The vice president met with Mexican authorities this week, and I think that we're going to see some resolution and get Mexico to cooperate with us.
All right, Rosemary, you got the big story.
I think the big story is that the federal government is telling cellular phone companies that they can finally block spam calls to my phone, which, yay. But I just want to say that, you know, former Governor Rick Scott has finally used the words climate change. He says climate change is real and there have to be real solutions. So let us all ask our U.S. Senator, what are the solutions?
All right, Beth, your other big story?
Mine is actually how corporate America is dealing with the challenges of dealing with diversity and profiling. So Sephora this week closed their corporate locations because of a very high profile incident where they profiled a rap star, and they wanted to teach their employees how to not racially profile customers, especially in retail industries like Sephora, where brown and black women traditionally purchase on average 4 times more product.
Yeah, they shut the company down for several hours.
Yeah. Similar to what Starbucks did.
All right, Zach, your other big story.
Well, I think it's going to be ongoing, but I would say the census and the fact that it's coming pretty quick on us. We had a good story in the Times this week, and we have a reporter who will be covering it over the next year, Langston Taylor, on a study from the Urban Institute that says Florida is at risk of having a severe undercount because of some of the hurdles and the possibility of a citizenship question in our high population of black and brown people here.
And that goes to government funding and also congressional seats.
Yep, and grant funding. It's going to have long-term ramifications over the next decade.
All right. Thank you all. Great to see you. Thank you for participating. Thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, the PBS station here in the Tampa Bay area. My guests were Rosemary Goodrow from the Florida Sun Sentinel newspaper and Zachary Sampson from the Tampa Bay Times. Those were the two journalists on the show. And then we heard from Chris Ingram, who is a Republican, and Beth Weinstein, a Democrat. And we talked about all those issues, the Cuba travel limits, the Scott Peterson deputy from the Parkland High School. He was the school resource officer. He was charged with 11 criminal counts. We heard about Mike Hill saying, chuckling at the idea of executing gays. And if you want to comment about any of these topics, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if you want to comment about any of the topics that came up on that show, you can do that now. We can open up the phone lines, and we can also talk about some of the other items in the news. That show was recorded on Friday night, so you heard some things have changed a bit since Friday night. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Adam writes this email. He says, Republicans are so disingenuous. These are his words. He says, Fox News literally pushes the line that immigrants are dirty and invading our country and taking over almost every single night. But the Republican on your panel wants to pretend that the party doesn't embrace racism. Now, that's Adam's comment. You can get your comment on the air by calling 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And we can talk about some of the other items in the news, too. There's lots going on. Coming up at 12 noon today, there will be a vote tomorrow night in Tampa of the people in charge of planning our road system, and they're going to vote on whether or not to expand I-275 in Tampa from Martin Luther King North to Bierce Avenue, expand I-275 by a lane going in each direction. So that vote will be tomorrow night to whether or not to go ahead with those plans. Let's go to John in Sulphur Springs, I think. John, you're on WMNF. What's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
Well, that's good. You know, as far as Trump's policies toward Cuba, he's an on-off kind of guy. He's kind of a Heraclitian, you know, the harmony of discord to set up differences between certain factors and then set himself up as the determining judge of how it should be. And as far as the old man that didn't go in to get a shooter, whether he heard the shots or not, you can see a picture of him. I mean, he's not Wyatt Earp anymore. And people get older and they have more reserves as to their capabilities and abilities to, you know. So I think they should just sort of retire him and let him live with whatever he thinks is the situation. But to go after him is kind of like, you know, kind of like the wrong way to go. He's an old man. He was afraid, probably. And there's a lot of that in the world, although nobody will readily cop to it, but a lot more than people think.
So, yeah. And now, so, you know, one of the things I've been wondering about for the last few months is, do you think that both the American public and foreign leaders have President Trump figured out? And that is that he'll claim that there's some big crisis, and he'll put his foot down, and then there will be a period where we don't know what Trump is going to do next. And then for a few weeks or a few hours or a few months, that crisis will continue to be in the news. And then at some point, Trump will say, okay, the crisis is over, we've solved the problem. And he'll agree to do something that had been agreed to months ago by the parties, that's the outline of how President Trump deals with conflict.
Well, he's a Heraclitian type of person. There's harmony and discord, according to Heraclitus of Ephesia, way back when, and it's kind of carried through. Certain individuals use that to take attention off of some things and cast fear in the hearts of others, similar to the gay marriage thing that Bush did. But overall, you know, like, he just plays the way, you know, like, that the most of the people that are in his corral think. So keep his little group together, and the conflict is power for the court. You know, coming around to the end product, which he sits in judgment, makes his own decision, and then therefore that's the way everybody should believe that it should be. Everybody that he deems, you know, like, powerful enough with enough money to make a difference when it comes to election day. But he's going to have a hard time, you know, like, he lucked out the other time. But I'm afraid this time there's too much clear vision taking place.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And that John's point about the deputy no longer being Wyatt Earp, you know, you wonder, the shooting was horrible. It took space at the Parkland High School in the period of 4 minutes. But you wonder, you know, what would you do, even if you've been trained in the use of arms and weapons, what would you do? Your initial thought, hearing shots, not knowing where those shots came from, what would you do outside of school? I'm not justifying Scott Peterson's behavior, but the massacre certainly was over in a few minutes. And should Scott Peterson be charged with essentially enough criminal charges, to be put in prison for almost 100 years. 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in Port Richey. John, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show, Rob. I had another point, but you asked the question about, do you think the world leaders has figured out that Trump manufactures a crisis and then resolves the crisis with something that's already been there? I figured that out this morning listening to Amy Goodman when they were talking about this whole tariffs with Mexico and how he solved the problem now, but the agreement was basically agreed on, what, weeks or months before?
Right.
All he did was maybe up the ante, like, oh, instead of 5,000, we'll put 6,000 or 10,000, whatever the difference. We just upped the numbers, which I think could have been done through normal negotiations. Now, if I can figure it out, I figure the world leaders can figure that out, too.
I think they've got his number now. I think that we've seen enough with his, sucking up to North Korea. People have him figured out now.
Right, but it's good for his base because they probably don't listen to a lot of Amy Goodman or alternative radio, so they think that he's doing a great job. You see what he did with Mexico? He put his foot down and he showed him who's boss. He's making America great again because they don't hear the full story. They don't hear the other side. All they hear is the one-side propaganda that wants to be pushed by the conservative media. But something that your guest said on the show there, he said that we don't have, they're talking about the children being held, and he said that he's never been there, but we don't have the money to take care of this. I was just looking up. I think, didn't Trump move like $3 to $4 billion out of the military spending to put towards the wall because of his emergency declaration?
Yeah, he took some money out of the Pentagon budget, yeah.
Yeah, just looking at here, just real quick on the Google, it says, you know, the White House promised $3.6 billion. That was back in February. Then in May, it said another $1 billion. So I'm like, if we got $3 billion to take from the military to put towards a wall, I think we got a little bit of money to where we can make these facilities a little more humane for the people that we're keeping there, since we're supposed to be responsible and in charge of these people. But once again, I just don't see a lot of compassion coming from the conservative side. Now, that's just my observation, so maybe I'm wrong on this, but it seems to me that a lot of conservatives are not that compassionate towards these children. Now, maybe that goes back to they're not seeing the truth. They're not seeing the actual fact. They're not listening to people that are going down there talking to these people and getting their perspective. Once again, what they're hearing is just the propaganda that they see from conservative news.
And John, do you think that if these were immigrants from Canada or from Ireland, that they would be separated from their parents? Or, you know, let's say that some of these kids came over individually from Ireland or Canada and they had relatives over here. Do you think that the Trump administration would do everything it could to find the families where those kids belong and hook them up with the families that live here already? I mean, are we treating people from Central America and from South America and from Cuba? Some of these refugees are coming from Cuba. Some are coming from Mexico. Are we treating them differently than we would treat people of European ancestry?
Historically speaking, I'm not sure if you can really say that because we were anti-immigrant in the past.
Right, but I'm saying about today. If they were coming today from Canada or if they were coming today from Ireland and they were mostly Northern European or Western European, would we be separating families the way we do right now?
I don't think we would. I think we would be keeping the families together, letting them come in, doing the due process, not making them stay in their country or stay in Canada, stay outside the country, which, once again, if anybody knows international law, is that a violation of the asylum requirements on the U.S. side and the national? Or
yeah, I think
worldwide?
People have the right to come to a country and claim asylum. John,
right,
thanks a lot.
But do they have to stay in Mexico, or can they come in the country? That's what was my thought.
Yeah, I'll have to look up the law. I don't know, John. But, John,
right,
thanks a lot. I think people do have the right to claim asylum. And, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Clark writes this: it was so great to see Chris Ingram on your TV show on Friday. I miss his WEDU show with Alex Sink a lot. Not sure exactly what Clark's saying there, but one day they were asked about capital punishment, my number one issue. Much to my surprise, Alex was for capital punishment. Chris was against it. Any chance M&F would have a show with Chris Ingram since the wonderful Dan Ruth left? Yeah, Chris was on a local AM station for a long time, and then suddenly that that station has pretty much laid off most of its local hosts. I don't know, Clark. We'll see. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Sean at Lake Magdalene. Sean, you're on WMNF. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. So I'm pretty much in accordance with everything else that's been said so far. But I'm surprised not a lot of people are talking about is all the diversion tactics. You know, you've got the guy who, the sheriff that's been, or not the sheriff, the deputy that's been arrested, and instead of just the thoughts and prayers, they're actually doing something. Well, they're saying they can do something, but they're not actually looking at the root problems of gun control and mental health care, and they're just trying to divert these tactics so they can say, oh, we fixed the Parkland problem by just arresting and putting in jail one guy instead of looking at the systemic problems. Same thing goes with climate change. All of a sudden, they're coming back around on it now that we're at probably the worst part of the problem, not to mention there's the whole issue with Mexico and how they've got the deal already set out going through March, but then he has to say it on air, oh, we're going to put on tariffs in order to keep his base happy. It's just all these awful tactics that they're trying to do.
Well, your point about diversion, especially when it comes to Parkland, is really good. If you were to look at all the inaction by government officials over the years that led to the Parkland massacre, I mean, there were tips sent in to law enforcement agencies. Some of the people observed mental health problems on the part of the shooter. How did this shooter get a gun? If you were to look at all the problems associated with that massacre, including the failure of the school resource officer to charge in there and at least attempt to do something in that fatal 4 minutes. Of all the people that could be charged with something, the shooter and him have been charged, and nobody else. So nobody is really asking, why does a person who appears to have some mental problems, why is he able to get some dangerous weapons? Why is that? And who sold him the weapons? And you know, what government agency has done anything to make sure that people that might have anger issues don't have access to some of these lethal weapons? Nobody talks about that issue. I think your point is a real good one, Sean.
Yeah, not to mention this isn't like the first time that this happens. Say you look at the Iraq war and all of a sudden all the goalposts have been changing about, oh, we were supposed to go in there for weapons of mass destruction and all we did was topple a dictator because he was a bad guy. It's just kind of these tactics happening over and over again, and we're seeing it repeat itself here. We just need to call it out whenever we see it and take everything that I don't even care if it's both Republicans, of course, it's a lot worse on their side, but just everybody, take everything with a grain of salt, especially with all of the evidence of, you know, these white lies that they tell.
Yeah, it's good to be skeptical. All right, Sean, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Well, you are listening to WMNF at Tampa 88.5 FM, and let's go to Chuck, who's in Tampa. Chuck, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
How you doing, Rob?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. With all due respect to my friend John there, who thinks all of us Trump voters are a bunch of mind-numb rubes that, you know, watch Fox News and just, you know, walk like a robot and, you know, can't do anything without Sean Hannity tell us, we're not the people who were watching CNN and MSNBC and listening to Richard Wolff and Amy Goodman telling us that, you know, Trump was a Russian spy for 2 years. So, first off, that's one thing. Two, I watched the fake news media. You know, Trump. Are you there?
Yeah, waiting for you, Chuck.
Oh, I thought you were going to cut me off. You usually cut me and pop me down.
Boy, you are so defensive today. Could I just say one thing though before you start launching your second point? Richard Wolff never really talked about Trump being a Russian spy, and Amy Goodman never talked about Trump being a Russian spy. In fact, Amy had a series of debates, including Julian Assange and Aaron Maté, who were skeptics about the Russian story. She had a series of debates with those folks, and she had a really great conversation about whether or not the Russian investigation was worthwhile. So on neither case were you right when you said Richard Wolff and Amy Goodman. Now, if you were to say Rachel Maddow has done 99% of her shows on the Russia theory, then yes, that would be accurate. But go ahead.
Okay. Anyways, I spent my weekend watching CNN and MSNBC. You know what? They worked so hard and tirelessly to try to knock Trump down. You know, he gets this tariff thing, and that ain't going to work. And then you know, he comes up with a little something. They're going to put 6,000 more National Guard down there. And we don't know the whole story, but they worked so hard to just knock everything the guy does down. And, I mean, the bottom line is this guy's going to get reelected, hands down. I will guarantee it, just like last time. And, you know, why don't they try being honest and just report the story like the New York Times on their cover? You got to go to page 27 to see, well, they are sending 6,000 more troops down there. That's the 27th paragraph on that story, they put it. Why did they bury it so far back?
Well, the New York Times story, and you know, I don't have it in front of me, but the New York Times story essentially said this is a deal that Mexico had agreed to months ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but then we find out there is new stuff in the deal, like the 6,000 troops and other things. It's on paragraph 27.
All right, I will go back and look at it. I don't have it in front of me.
See what I mean? See how misleading that is to people?
Well, I think if the New York Times story, if the intent of the story was to say that Trump came up with no new deal over the weekend,
the intent of the headline was to say this is something that was already there. Trump's
a liar.
He didn't get nothing done. Then you read on 27. Well, they did add some new things like 6,000 more troops.
Okay,
let me ask you one other thing,
Chuck. I don't have the story in front of me, but I'm gonna double check that and make sure. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
One more thing. What have the Democrats done to help the crisis with the poor children down at the border? Have they done anything to help out in Congress?
Well, you know, I'm not a spokesperson for the Democratic Party, but
well,
I would
I'm
say...
asking you, do you know anything about this?
Would say that several Democratic members of Congress have gone down to the detention centers where children are being held. Sometimes they've asked to be let in. They've been barred from being let in. But they've been trying to highlight the fact that the conditions there are very poor. And just last week, the Trump administration did away with some of the educational and recreational provisions, too. So it becomes more and more like a prison where people are under lockdown. So the Democrats have pointed this out over and over again. I have not seen a single Republican go to one of these detention facilities and say, this is outrageous, these are human beings, and they're children, and they should not be separated from their parents, and they should not be held in prison-like conditions. If they have relatives in the U.S., they ought to be reunited with those relatives. And I've not seen a single Republican say that. I've seen dozens of Democrats say that. And I'm not a spokesperson for the Democratic Party.
Now, come on. Now, they need money down there. They need help. The Border Patrol has asked them for help. Congress will not release the money. They're not doing any.
Well,
doing jack squat.
Well, Congress passes all these bills on the House side over and over again. And on the Senate side, they're not doing anything. I mean, look at all the bills that have been passed in the last few months by the House. And the Senate has done very little. And you know who controls the House? The Democrats. And you know who controls the Senate? The Republicans. So I would say that, yes, Congress is doing something, but it's all being bottled up in the Senate, and you can bet that President Trump isn't going to sign some of these bills.
Yes, sir. Well, one more thing, and I'll let you go, because I've tied up the line.
You'll let me go.
I know you guys think that they're just out there picking tomatoes and everything. These guys are taking our jobs, these immigrants. They're literally taking jobs from the color community. They're doing everything. The colors used to do the stucco.
Where do you get this backwards language from, Chuck? That's you made a lot of good points, and then you turn that corner. That's pretty offensive. So, Chuck, thank you for your phone call. Good to hear from you. And let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
I'm so glad you... shows me, since I'm one of those colors that used to work in the tomato farm, not
One thing I wanted to mention was a caller, he called in, he said that the Republicans don't know what Trump is doing because they don't watch or listen to certain people. They do know. What it is that Trump is meeting their agenda, and he's going to get his on the back end. If they know what he's doing, he's meeting their agenda, and later on when he leaves, he's going to have all that money that he's supposed to be turning down right now. What I mean by, you know, with Russians going to his hotels, he's getting it business-like, and that's how he's doing it. And he doesn't care about any other thing but meeting the Republicans' agenda. They know exactly who he is. I wanted to bring that point up, but I want to get a little bit off base to go with, have you seen the Netflix series When They See Us about the lady who prosecuted those five kids, and now she's really losing a whole lot of things. Her book deal, some other things she had to resign.
Yeah, we're talking about the Central Park Five. I haven't seen the series. I saw an interview with them, I think, on CBS Sunday Morning, and I can't imagine going through that. What a horrible story. And President Trump was big in pushing their prosecution. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. For the guy who just left off, listen, black people do more than one thing. What you're saying was very ignorant. I think you don't know the contributions that blacks have made to this country. And what you need to do is go look on all our inventions. Some things that's in your house today that you use every day that blacks have invented to this country. So I think you better go and do a lot. And that's why a lot of things with a lot of whites, they don't really realize the contributions that we made, medicine, and a lot of things we made in this country, period.
Yeah,
we work on farms. Very ignorant.
Yeah, thanks. Gino, that's right. That's right. And thank you for the call. You know, stereotypes like the one Chuck was making are always wrong. Sound Guy writes this: so we're jailing cowards and pardoning murderous war criminals. What's wrong with this picture? Writes Sound Guy. And then Sue writes this: sure, if they were Irish, he would let them in. Didn't he just say he loves the Irish? He knows them all. Writes Sue. By the way, Frank Knox is our phone producer today. 813-239-9663. Here's an anonymous email from 727 area code. It says, amazing, Rob, why were you allowing people to generalize and say they and conservatives think this? That's in cognitive thinking. If you want to be compassionate, John and Rob and whomever Ben call immigration and donate part of your home to housing these people, these children and families would very much appreciate it. I'm not sure I understood that email, but I read it for you there, 727. Thank you for that. And Denny writes this, I recommend that your callers watch the BBC for real news. Well, Denny, thank you for that. And let's go to Susan on Anna Marie Island. Susan, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, Rob. I wish Chuck wouldn't be so aggressive and on the defense. I mean, if we could all have a conversation, you know, we would have more solutions than problems, because it seems like you did this, you did that type of thing. And I don't think that's productive at all. As far as that deputy, no, I don't think he should be prosecuted at all. And I think there's a problem in this country where we equate the military with the police. And, I mean, you can be in military and be police, but not really vice versa, except for exceptions like, you know, SWAT teams and things like that that are highly trained. So, you know, and you know, you have to have the human factor in there, because yes, what would you do? I mean, you know, I don't think he should be prosecuted. I think he's.
Yeah, I think of it. And Rosemary pointed this out on the show. People, though, are rankled in South Florida, in Broward County. They think of this guy Scott Peterson as a coward, and they look. He was able to retire with his full pension, which is $9,000 a month, and there's a lot of anger down there. So I think people are feeling like, well, you were the school resource officer, you should have done something instead of hid. But I think what we got to find out is, what does the trial say? Because I'm told, and I haven't seen this, apparently in interviews that I think the New York Times had a transcript, he did more than just hide. But I got to admit, I have not read the transcripts of those interviews with Peterson.
Right. And Rob, real quick about Cuba. We were planning a trip to go to Cuba. I have a friend, Catherine, there, and we've been going back and forth. And, of course, we can't go. We're all excited. And of course, she says, oh, I'm so excited about you coming. I'm going to look for some Cuban gifts for you. And then, you know, with what Trump's done, I think it's just very malicious. And the last text last email I got from her is, you know, she's going to lose her job. And because
why is she going to lose her job? Because she works where?
A lot. She's a guide, a private guide.
I see. So she guides American tourists, and because the American tourism is drying up, she's going to lose her job.
Right, and besides her native tongue, she speaks three different languages. So she'll be able to do the French and the German, but the Americans were a large part, and we were there. There were a lot of Americans there, so it saddens me that that's happened.
And she was getting a nice income from doing those tours.
Absolutely, and they're good people, and they don't deserve this, and there's just no reason for it, and very upsetting.
All right.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Canan. He's coming up next. Should Interstate 275 in the heart of Tampa between Martin Luther King and Bierce Avenue be widened? That'll be one of the topics he talks about next, so stick around, listen to that. I'm Rob Lori. Frank Knox has been our phone producer today. This is WMNF Tampa-St. Petersburg. Here's the latest news.